Okay, so we're in the last little bit of the introduction. The final benefit that he tells us about that you will get if you work on your bitachon is on page 34, you'll be always happy. In addition to refusing to get upset when things do not go as planned, a person who has bitachon can actually rejoice with whatever comes his way. Omehen, among the material benefits is that a person who has bitachon is happy with whatever is forced upon him, even if it is difficult and against his nature. He is able to be happy because of his trust in God that he will only do to him that which is good for him in all matters, just as a caring mother does.
This also switches the top of the stairs, yeah?
Just as a caring mother does for a newborn child when she washes diapers, swaddles and unswaddles him, even if it's against the newborn's will, because obviously the mother knows best what the child needs, and the child isn't really aware. So they might not like going in the bath, let's say, but the mother knows that it's what the child needs, and therefore when the mother does it, the mother's doing it for the best of the child. So we have to feel, so to speak, the same way with Hashem, realize that whatever Hashem does for us, Hashem is with us. Hashem is with us on the journey, and therefore, and He only does for us what is the best, and therefore we could be happy with whatever the circumstances. In the same manner that a mother occasionally does things against a child's will, because it is really for the good of the child, so too, God sometimes does things to a person that seems to him as not good, and therefore against his will, but are ultimately in his best interest. As King David says in Tehillim, I swear that I calmed and quieted my soul like a suckling on its mother, like a suckling was my soul with me. Although David HaMelech had many troubles, he remained calm because he considered himself like a suckling on his mother. He believed that everything Hashem was doing was for his best. So this always happy, it's the last benefit that he gives us, because it's the hardest one to work on. As in, happy as by definition is an emotion, and the emotions. So there's two ways how. There's two ways how we can live our life. We can either let our emotions feed into our brain, into our intellect, or let our intellect feed into our emotions. And the difference is, when you walk past the bakery and you smell the beautiful bread baking, and that makes you want some bread, that's your emotions telling your intellect that now you have to have it. So it's working that way around. Whilst here, we're trying to download the emunah from our intellect, knowing that God does everything, and trying to download it into our emotional being. Okay, so the author concludes his introduction by outlining the content of the seven chapters of Shah Habitachon. V'kivan shebi'arti mitoyales habitachon pelekim v'hana'osav v'atayra uv'oylam ma'ashen ezamen li avoy atam inin habitachon shevadvarim. Since I've explained that which has occurred to me, meaning that this whole sefer, he wasn't just writing concepts, he had worked through trying to live this. He had understood at the beginning of writing. So this is actually the fourth part in Chovos HaLevavos, and he had actually worked through all these different matters. So since I've explained that which has occurred to me pertaining to the benefits of having trust in God and its benefits both in regards to Torah matters and in regard to worldly pursuits, I will now explain seven matters pertaining to Bitachon. Echad mehen. Echad mehem mahu habitachon. The first chapter is what is trust. V'hasheni. The second chapter of the book is besibas habitachon al habroim, the causes that enable a person to trust in another. V'hashlishi beviyah hakdomas tasher b'avurin ischayv habitachon melekim v'chiyav ha'isek b'sibos. The third chapter is to explain the prerequisites due to which a person is obligated to have trust in God, as well as to explain the obligation to engage in the means to pursue a livelihood. The fourth chapter is to explain the matters regarding which a person should trust in God, as well as when it is not as well as when it is praiseworthy to have trust and when it is not. The fifth chapter is about the difference between how a man who has trust in God engages in his parnasa, in his livelihood, and how a man who does not have trust engages in it. V'hashishi, and the sixth chapter, Bevia often a chiv gnus das aimrim barichas hatavas by ilum yachrim nafresim kabalas, the kabalas avoidas arikim, kishayagir lechef some boy, vehem bale hamashkoines. To explain the ways in which logic dictates that a person must criticize the opinion of those who say that people should engage in the pursuit of worldly pleasures and delay accepting upon themselves the service of God until they obtain their materialistic desires. So this is actually something that we discussed in the introduction. We discussed about the negotiation with the hostages, how when you've got the two sides on the two sides of the line and there's no trust, then each side wants the other side to give what they have over the line first. So with Hashem, we often say to Hashem, kind of, you know, I'll do this, that, and the other. I'll do everything you want from me, but only after you've given me everything that I want from you. But that is not how it works. The whole idea, by definition, of this trust of the Shabbat Achon is to realize that you have to give first. You have to first do what Hashem wants from you, and only then can you expect, so to speak, Hashem to give back to you. Whom the owner refers to as the owners of security pledges. In the sixth chapter, he basically explains that if you have a picadon by a friend, and you have a picadon by a friend, so let's say you give your watch to a friend, and then that friend, I don't know how it goes, then that friend wants to borrow money. You give your watch to a friend, and that friend wants to borrow money from you. I don't remember. I'll have to check over to it. But basically, the main point they bring in chapter 6 is that all the deals that we make with Hashem, we have to realize that before we woke up in the morning, Hashem had already given us all of the 24 hours of the day. The fact that we are able to breathe and keep going throughout the day is already, Hashem has already given us something else. So Hashem has already given us the security pledge, and now we're not trusting Him that He's going to give us everything, so we're asking Him to give us the thing that we want first. That's how He speaks now.
That was exactly the third explanation. What you said now, what we have, is to explain the prerequisites due to which a person is obligated to have trust in God, as well as to explain the obligation to engage in the means to pursue a livelihood.
Right, so the third one gives the reasons why you should trust in God and not in anyone else. The sixth one is explaining how the actual trust system works with Hashem, that you have to realize that Hashem has already given you more than you could ever give Him back, and He will carry on giving you. To tell Him that you're only going to give back to Him, so to speak, by going to Tefillah, by learning Torah, only once He's given you the money, which is what happens to lots of people.
So simply as that's the system, that's how.
Yeah, but we only know the system because of the way that.
By the believing of what we're doing. And experiencing it, that little bit of experiencing, not experiencing something bad, experiencing something that probably is that we don't know. Preferring we don't know good or bad, and usually it's good.
Everything's good.
Yeah.
Everything's good. We might not always see it as good. You know, it
usually means we don't know.
If you walk into an operating theatre, yeah, and you don't know anything about the medical world, and you see five guys with masks. You can't see anything other than their eyes, and they're busy, you know, they've got a person open on the table, and they've cut the person open. It looks terrible. It looks really bad. Five guys round off. But when you do have a bit of knowledge, you realize that this is good for the person. This is how they save the person's life. Yes, they have to make cuts, and they have to make scars, and they have to do different things, and they have to take out things when a dentist has to drill in your tooth to make it a little bit bigger so that he can put a filling in.
Doctor says to me, embroidery. So I said, I was just thinking of it, what kind of an artist you were, because are you able, like how I spoke in the middle, are you able to take satin thread and sew velvet? She laughed. Because she was, wow, you know how much you work like embroidery, she told me.
Let's discuss afterwards. Sounds great. Yeah, so, exactly. But when they're putting in a filling, let's say they've got to drill the hole bigger. Now, that act of drilling the hole bigger, is that act a bad act or a good act? So because you know that it's going to lead into them fixing your tooth, therefore you look at it as a good act. You don't look at the actual, at one particular detail and say, this is bad. So this is really how life works, that very often things seem like they are a negative detail, but often it's just the hole being drilled so that the filling can go into it. V'hashvi, and the seventh chapter, is b'mafside habitochen, to explain those matters that hinder a person's trust in God, also to elaborate on all that we need to discuss regarding the matter of trust, and to summarize the levels of trust. So the summary of the introduction is that placing trust in God brings tranquility in all areas of a person's life. It allows him to serve God with more peace and affords him an anxiety-free lifestyle. Okay.
It's like you're saying about the watch. If somebody gives you, somebody deposit on the watch, right?
No, yeah, so
you've got a deposit.
If someone gives me a deposit from the watch, and then he asks me, he asks me to give him, someone gives me a watch, yeah, his gold watch, he says, please can you look after this? You can wear it, you can use it, please can you look after it? And then he says, by the way, can I have 100 shekel from you? And you say, don't trust that you're going to pay back. I'm just giving you a golden watch. So with Hashem, the relationship is that he's given us something worth way more than we could ever.
The opportunity then, itself.
As in life, yes. Life. Hashem gives us life. We say every morning, every single morning, Hashem is giving us our life back, and he's letting us have, hopefully every single day we wake up, it's another 24 hours, but the day is going to come that it's not going to be, but every day that we do have those full 24 hours, we owe it all to him. And to start making deals with him, I'm only going to go to tefillah if you make this business meeting work, so that I'll have enough money, so I won't need to go to work, and I won't need to, et cetera, et cetera. People get very carried away. Okay, so Perek Rishon. Just to point out something that I've been learning actually in Tanya, which I just noticed now that, like, all the way through, there's different names of Hashem that we use. The most classic is Yudke Vovke, which is in all our davening. Which Yudke Vovke is from the Yud is a continuation, and Hoyve is Hey Vov Hey. We say that Hashem is Hoya Hoyve Viya. That Hashem is presently everywhere. And the name of Elohim is the name of Din. It's the name of Gevurah. It's the name of when Hashem is hiding himself. Because if Hashem would give Chesed too freely, then we won't be able to cope. As in everything that we have, every single thing that we have ever had, that we will ever have, every bit of food that you've had, every drink that you've had, every bit of money that you've had, every bit of nachat, everything that we've had, Hashem has given to us out of pure chesed, not because we deserved it, but because he loves us and he just wants to give us. The problem is that if it was done too openly, then we would become basically spoiled brats, and we wouldn't have a situation of bechira in the world where we can choose between good and bad, because if Hashem is obviously, as in, if we would see every time someone helps us, or every time someone gives us something, or every time we eat something, if we would really see a hand like that, you know, there's like a hand that's come down from heaven and given it to us, then it would be too obvious, and there would be no point in the world. Because the whole point of the relationship with Hashem is that Hashem wants us to be able to choose him. Therefore, Hashem had to cover himself up with Din, with Gevurah, which is represented in the name Elohim. Now, interestingly, the Tani points out that the name Elohim is the gematria of Hateva, of nature. As in, even the whole nature, everything in nature, the fact that there's, you know, nature is made up of millions and millions of systems. We discussed this a bit in the last year, but nature is made up of the most unbelievable systems, that these systems can completely block Hashem out of the picture. The fact that you have had scientists, you know, Newton stood under a tree, and to him, he had to understand why when an apple falls, why it's going down, and he stood there, and he had to try working it out. And they've all gone to look at nature, where they cannot see Hateva Elohim, where there's a complete blockage between us and Chesed, and it is blocked by Hashem's mask called Teva, called Elohim. So really, when we're going through any sorts of challenges, as you see, if you look through in Tehillim, it's very, very interesting how David HaMelech, when there's Tehillim about Halel, where he's praising Hoidel Hashem ki toki lo impastai, it's all with Yudke Vavke, because there David HaMelech is thanking Hashem for the Chesed. But whenever David is saying, whenever David is yearning to Hashem for help in whatever situation he's in, whether his son was chasing him or whether he needed whatever it was that he needed, he's suddenly talking to Hashem in the Lashon of Elohim, because that means that he realizes that Hashem is in the middle of testing him. In the Akedah, if you read at the front of the Siddur every day, before Shacharis, there's the Akedah of when Avraham Avinu took Yitzchak up, which was his 10th test. And it's interesting that the whole way there, he's talking to Yitzchak that Elohim Yerelanu Aseh, that we're going to go to this place which Elohim said we should go to. He realizes that he's in a test. He's then up there and he puts Yitzchak down. And then, Vayomer Malach Yudke Vavke Min Hashemayim, that a Malach of Hashem came down and said, okay, that's enough. You have shown us Ki Yirei Elohim Ata. You have shown us that you were in awe of Elohim, meaning that you.
It says Yudke, not Elohim. It says.
Huh?
It says Malach.
It says Yudke. Yeah. So it says Elohim all the time that he's in test mode. He's referring to Hashem as Elohim. Yeah. From when the Malach comes and says, don't touch him. Al tishlach el hana. That is when the yudkei vavkei comes back into story. That's when Hashem removes the gate of Gevurah and starts to shine through. Anyway, the definition of trust. Ach, mahus habitachon hi menuchas hanefesh habiteach. V'sheyeh libo yisomach al mi shabotach olav, she'yasa ha'toyv anachin loy be'inyin ha'sheyivtach olav, k'fi yecholtoy v'datoy b'ma shemepik toyvosoy. The essence of trust is the peace of mind of the person who has trust, and that he relies on the person in whom he is trusting, that he, the person in whom he is trusting, will do the good and correct thing for him. In the matter, will do the good and correct thing for him in the matter regarding which he is trusting him, according to his ability and knowledge, to bring that which is good for him into actuality. Trust is the peace of mind the person has due to the trust he has placed in another, that the latter will do what he has entrusted him to do. However, in order to have this peace of mind, he must be completely certain that the person who he trusts will be good to him. But the main thing as a result of which the trusting person will trust, and without which he will not trust, is number one, he needs to be certain that the person who he's relying upon will follow through on that which he said and do what he promised to do. And number two, the person he is trusting even has a mind to do good with him, that which he had never stipulated or assumed responsibility to do, and that he will do it as an act of his generosity and kindness. This is necessary. On page 42, this is necessary because otherwise the person will always be worried that he is undeserving of the goodness of the one in whom he is placing his trust, which will cause him to stop trusting in him. So the definition of trust is the peace of mind that a person achieves as a result of his complete trust in someone else. Meaning, if you send your kids to the shop to go buy something, if you then say, take the phone with in case you've got a problem, and then if I'm going to your phone, yeah, have you made it to the shop? Have you done this? Then that's a lack of trust. If you're able to give over an instruction to ask someone to do something for you, and then leave go. The leaving go, the peace of mind of when you're able to completely trust the other side, is the definition of bitachon. In order to achieve this peace of mind, the trusting person must be sure that the person he is trusting will follow through on his promises. Additionally, the trusting person must also feel that the other will be kind to him in matters beyond that which the other took responsibility for. So this is a very short chapter. Now we'll just get started with chapter 2. So in chapter 2, what he does is, I actually had the bitachon card I gave you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically a summary of chapter 2, where chapter 2 basically is Hashem, the Rabbeinu Bachya proves that there's seven qualities that you need to really have all these seven qualities in order to fully be able to trust someone, and Hashem is the only being that has all of these seven qualities at the same time. So the seven qualities of trustworthiness. The author begins the chapter by enumerating the seven qualities. These are the seven factors that you must have in order to trust someone else. So the first one is that a friend must show that he truly cares about his fellow. The first factor is a friend must possess the character traits of compassion, empathy, and love. Someone who you know cares about you and is compassionate for you and has empathy for you, then you know that he's going to help you compassion, empathy, and love. Yep.
Isn't compassion, empathy similar? Compassion is when you're. Isn't the same thing?
Compassion, I think, is the way you show it. Empathy is
feeling.
Yeah. When I walk past, I walk past lots of people who have empathy.
I show compassion.
I don't show. If you walk past, like a homeless person on the street, you know, outside the bank, there's always the homeless person. If you walk past him and you feel something inside of you, never. That's empathy. If you go give him a shekel, that's a form of compassion.
Mm.
If you go buy him food, it's an even higher level of compassion. Mm. If you go and you take him in and you look after him, then that would be love. So they all. So they all stem from the same internal feeling. Just the question is how far you act on it. So a person who knows that his friend truly cares will feel confident that his friend will fulfill any request asked of him. However, compassion alone is not enough to create trust in the person he cares about. Although the friend may care a lot about his fellow, it is possible that the former will not pay attention to him. Additionally, the friend may act lazily when it comes to actually helping his fellow. Therefore, the person must know that in addition to his friend's love and care, he will also never ignore him or grow negligent. But Hashenis, the second factor you need, is The person knows that in addition to his friend's love towards him, his friend will not ignore him, nor will he become lax in fulfilling his wishes. Rather, the latter knows his friend has decided to fulfill his wishes and will make every effort to do so. Yeah. So, if you're friendly with a very, very, very busy person, to rely on a busy person to do things for you, he might love you. You might be the greatest thing in the world, his greatest friend. But if he's busy with other things, if he's busy with his family, if he has anything going on, then that is going to be where his main focus lies. And therefore, part of the trust is that you have to know that the person will not be lax in doing that which needs from them. That they're actually going to get it done. Ki im lo yisparu lo mimenu kol zeh. For if all the above is not clear, lo yeh bitchone olav shalim. You won't rely on him fully. Mipnei shehu yodea his almusay v'rifyone b'cheftzay. Because he knows that his friend may ignore him and become lax in fulfilling his wishes. Only when the friend he is trusting possesses both these qualities, which is great compassion for him and attentiveness to all of his matters, will he be able to rely on him without any doubt. However, even with these two, even if he knows that the friend may have the best intentions to take care of him, the friend might not possess the ability to do so. It is therefore necessary that in addition to the above two qualities, the latter also possesses the ability to take care of him. So the first person already has the compassion, he has the empathy, he has the love. You know that he's got that he's not going to forget about it. He's going to do everything that he can. But if what you need is, I don't know, something in health or something in finances, he might not be a doctor, he might not have the medical knowledge, or he might not have the financial capabilities, or whatever else it is that whatever other situation, he might not have the actual tools to be able to help you. So therefore he says that the third factor you need, and the third factor is shayia chazok. The person being trusted must be so strong that he will not be won over by others who try to oppose him regarding any matter that he wishes to achieve. Nothing will stop him from fulfilling the request of the one who is trusting in him.
The request or the trust?
Nothing, as in, we're talking about the person that's helping the one that's trusting. So we need to make sure that nothing's going to stop him from fulfilling the request. If he is weak, then you can't have a complete trust in him. Because in many situations, he will be lacking the means with which to fulfill the wants of the person trusting in him. Once you've got all these three things, that firstly, you know that he's compassionate, he's empathetic, and he loves you, and you know that he's really going to take you seriously, he's not going to ignore you, and he's not going to be lazy, and you also know that he seems to possess the means needed to be able to help you, then that will be a good way of trusting in him. However, even if the person cares, is diligent, and shows the ability to overcome any obstacle, he may not always know what is in a person's best interest. It is therefore necessary that in addition to possessing the above three qualities, he also knows what is in his best interest. The fourth thing is that the one who's being trusted knows which things will be of true benefit to the one who is trusting in him, and that which is good for the trusting one will not be hidden from him. Both in situations where and that which is good for the trusting one will not be hidden from him, both in situations where the benefit is apparent and in situations where the benefit is hidden. Because if he doesn't know, if the one who is being trusted doesn't know enough background information about his friend, then the guy that's trusting in him won't have a full peace of mind. For if the friend does not know all this, then the person trusting in him will lack the peace of mind to rely upon him. Only when these four qualities come together in the friend who's being trusted, knowledge of what will benefit his needs, ability to help him, active attentiveness and compassion, will trust in the friend be strengthened without any doubt. So just back to the example of sending someone shopping for you, sending one of your kids or a friend shopping for you. You know, when you put down on a shopping list, you put down, I want Coke Zero. And you go to the shop and there is no Coke Zero. So a friend who knows me well enough will know that I'm okay with Pepsi Max. Like, as an example. But if he comes back, he wants to help me, but what I asked him for wasn't there, and he doesn't know what substitutes, so to speak, can give, because he doesn't know enough about me, and therefore he's going to come back with no drinks. I'm going to be at home thirsty and upset, and upset that I don't have any drink, and therefore that's why it has to be that, and that's why the fourth one is that the person needs to know he needs to know enough about you, so that you will be able to have a complete peace of mind. The author now continues by saying that in addition to all of the above qualities, the person must be under the exclusive care of the one he trusts in for all his needs. Since the person has always taken care of him, he will trust that person to continue to do so. The fifth factor, the person being trusted, is the only one who has taken care of him from the beginning of the latter's existence through his development, the 9 months when he was in his mother's womb, and the days of his infancy, childhood, youth, adulthood, old age, and until the end of his days. When all of this is clear to the trusting person, then it will surely lead him to having peace of mind, showing Olav, and to rely on him. Due to the good that the friend has done to him in the past, and as a result of the benefit that the person receives from him every moment, all this surely leads to a strengthened trust in his friend. He says, but this is not enough, because even if a person has been cared for exclusively by another until now, someone else may possibly interfere and cause him harm. Only when the other person is a sole individual with the ability to do good or bad to him, can he be fully trusted. So basically, you want to have someone that's got a history, that he's always helped you, because that's the only way that you know that he's really going to help you now, is if he's helped you at every single stage. Because if he's not helped you at every single stage, then sure, he was obviously someone else at that time, and he's got other things to deal with, and he might shy away from the responsibilities if anything changes. It's the only way to have real trust is if he's never once let you down. If he's never let you down, he has been there and he's been involved in everything, then that is going to help you have a better level of trust. But this is not enough, because even if a person has been cared for exclusively by another until now, someone else may possibly interfere. We read that. Okay, so Vahashishis, the sixth factor. The person who has trust is completely in the hands of the one that he trusts. No one else can be able to harm him, help him, do good to him, or protect him from harm. Like a servant who is tied up and imprisoned, who is completely under the jurisdiction of his master, with no one else able to do anything to him, neither good nor bad. When the person who has trust is completely under the jurisdiction of the one he is trusting, in the manner outlined above, it will be even more appropriate for him to place his trust in his friend. Meaning that your friend could be helping you with something, but meanwhile, different harm comes your way, and therefore it's not going to help you really have a complete level of menuchas nefesh, of trust. And therefore, it's got to be someone who you know that if this person is protecting you, no one can get in the way. Finally, the author says that the friend who's been trusted must be known as generous and kind, both towards those who deserve it and those who do not. For if this quality is not present in that friend, he might give up trusting in him, thinking that he's undeserving of his friend's kindness. The one who's being trusted has to be extremely generous and kind. He has to be kind to anyone who deserves it, who is deserving of his kindness, as well as anyone who does not deserve it. Additionally, his generosity must be constant, and his kindness continues, never ending and uninterrupted. Someone who possesses all these qualities, in addition to that which was mentioned earlier, i.e. he meets all the criteria necessary to gain a person's trust, then this surely leads the person who knows this about him to trust in him and to have peace of mind as a result of his reliance on him, both when it comes to the trusting person's behavior in public and his behavior in private. In the trusting person's mind, never worrying about his needs as well as with the rest of his body and his actions, and he will give himself over to the trusted person, accept his decrees and judge him positively in all his judgments and actions, believing that even those things that seem to be bad are actually good. So you've got to have, a person has to have all of these seven things. If you turn to page 54,
okay, we'll,
we'll go through next week where he proves how we see all these different things in Hashem. But just to go through the seven qualities that foster trust in God. So number one is compassionate and loving. We need to realize that Hashem loves us and He only wants our good. Number two is Hashem is attentive. Hashem, we say, Hinei lo yonum v'lo yishan Hashem Yisrael. Hashem will not go to sleep. He will get the job done. Nothing's going to get in His way. The Hashem is almighty. No one and nothing can stop Hashem from fulfilling His wishes. Hashem is all-knowing. Hashem will ensure that all outcomes are good. Hashem offers us exclusive care. Hashem has always exclusively taken care of us, and He won't stop. We are in Hashem's hands. It is only Hashem who can get things done. And generous and kind, don't worry whether you are deserving. Hashem is always generous. So, Mitzvah, next week we'll go into this a little bit more, how we see that Hashem.
When you end this thing, you're supposed to sing.